Moses, that's great that your dual role as a parent and an educator makes you perfectly positioned for this initiative. So what is the message that you want to get out there to teachers and parents who may be listening? What do you want them to get from this interview?
I want to make a passionate plea for people to, if you didn't tune in to Ross Green, to take a look at his interview as our keynote, because his words, seismic shift. That's what Ross Green told us about. The key to being trauma-informed is making a shift in your thinking. So if you are a teacher who didn't have the luxury that I had, and I'll call it that, of raising my son and being able to learn from him right in my own house, you have to make that shift from what's wrong with you to what's happened to you. And that's what happened to me with my son. Not what's wrong with you, why do you keep pulling on my drapes, but what happened to you that's making you return to this behavior? And it changed from you're just doing this to drive me crazy to why do you feel so compelled to do this? Because it started to look like he needed to do it, which helped me make the shift from, well, if you're going to do these bad things, then you're going to have a consequence, and that's the way you will learn to stop doing them, to let me find out what's drawing you to pull on the curtains and see if I can fill that need so you don't need to pull on the curtains, which is a much more compassionate approach to shifting behaviors. And so I heard something the other day, and I would love to tell you who said it because it's not my words, but I will just say anonymous since I want to make sure it's clear they're not my words, but they're fabulous. And this author was saying principals cannot discipline their way to achievement. And as a principal, I was thinking, but that's what we do in the absence of knowing what else to do. Like me years ago with that sticker chart, I didn't know what else to do. So you have children in your schools, and they may or may not be academically achieving, but their behavior is in the way of their learning, other kids learning, the safety of the school, depending on how severe these behaviors are for some of your students. Or even if it's an attention issue, so they may be sitting right in their chair, but this losing focus on what's happening in the classroom interferes with their ability to learn. And so you have detention, you have recess, timeout, you can dress it up any way you want, but it's you have to come and sit with me because you broke a school rule or are, you know, interfering with the lesson or shouting out or whatever kids do that puts a wrench in the delivery of your lesson or the children's absorption of your lesson. And yet we keep doing it. When I do trainings, one of the slides, I found this thing on the internet, and it's hysterical. It's this woman looking at a chalkboard, and there's a bunch of hash marks on the chalkboard. And she's talking to a fellow teacher, and she says, well, look, Billy's been in timeout 43 times this week. It must really be working. And the point is, you can't keep doing what you've always done, or you're going to keep getting what you've always gotten. So I say to teachers, and principals, since I have been in education, and we are not going to discuss how many years, suffice it to say, a lot of them, I have been talking, starting as a brand new teacher, my principals and my professional development staff talking to me about the achievement gap. And then I became a principal, and the superintendent was talking to me about my building's achievement gap. And now I'm a director of special education, and I'm looking at the data that shows the achievement gap and talking to my team about the achievement. Okay. For 100 years, we've been talking about the achievement gap. And we have fantastic curriculum. Many schools have solid response to intervention initiatives, fabulous reading programs, multimodal phonetics approaches, understanding that kids need double, triple doses of reading up through third grade to catch them young, to build those capacities because it changes their learning path forward. We are doing that very well in schools in this country. And yet, there's the kids in the achievement gap. And despite all of this growth in our knowledge of instruction, mathematics, writing and reading, and all of the fabulous progressive research-based things we have, there's still an achievement gap. So I say, if we keep doing what we've always done, we're going to keep getting what we've always gotten. We need to look at these kids in this gap differently. We need to say what's happened to them. I like to challenge educators that I work with to go back to the metrics in their schools, because I live in a lovely middle-class town in New Jersey, and you have to look hard to find the poverty, the kids who may have unsafe homes. Except we all know that in my lovely neighborhood, that could be happening next door, and I wouldn't know it. The point is, these kids are everywhere. So if you're a teacher or an administrator in an inner city, obviously you're sitting here listening going, yeah, that's three quarters of my school. Good for you. You already know why these kids are in the achievement gap. But for the suburban schools where it's not as obvious, I say to you, all of the children in your achievement gap probably have some kind of trauma history. Are they adopted? How often do they go to the nurse? Do they have attendance problems? Again, you know, how often are they getting detention, timeout, thoughtful? You know, I have a school who does positive reflection. And while that's very compassionate, you have to understand that kids who have trauma histories have brains that are developing differently. And I always tell people, we are very good in this country at understanding autism. Thank you to all of the, that was a grassroots organization. The parents were predominantly behind that movement, but they pushed and pushed and pushed. These kids are not behavior problems. They're not choosing their behavior. They need something different. And schools finally understood that and then went crazy to help these autistic children. As a special ed teacher, I was at the beginning of that movement. So I had children with autism in my room on this elaborate point system that I had, and I knew it wasn't working. They were having echolalia, or they were flapping, or they were stimming, and it didn't matter how many stickers I gave them. So I you know, just in case you're wondering, I did take my autistic children off those behavior charts that didn't work for them. But then I heard about this thing called autism, and I went to a workshop, and I was like, that explains this boy in my class. Oh, my gosh, I completely get it. And it's so much fun to be a part of the trauma movement now, because I get to see teachers in my workshop having the same light bulb. Oh, my gosh, I think this child in my class may have a trauma history. The other message that's very important to get out to people and schools, you don't have to start asking parents when they walk into your school, so how much trauma does your child have? You don't need to ask. You can look at the metrics. You can assume that everyone in your achievement gap has trauma, because trauma-informed care is really great care for all kids. So if you trauma-inform your school, you will see attendance go down. P.S., if you trauma-inform your school, you're taking good care of your teachers. We have other interviews that are going to talk about teacher care. It's a huge part of this movement. But teachers' attendance improves. Their physical and mental well-being improves. So the kids are present more, and we all know that present kids learn more than absent kids. And then your discipline problems are going to be reduced, because you're not going to be disciplining them. You're going to be responding to their behavior. People say, oh, so trauma-informed care is letting kids do what they want. Well, we can't stop a child from doing what they do until they're done doing it. And then it's what do we do about what they have done that changes the path that they take. So I encourage the schools to look at the metrics you already have. Look at the kids in your achievement gap. Poverty is probably a big one. Most of the kids in my achievement gap often were children who had were living in some level of poverty. And poverty is an adverse childhood experience on its own, but it also is connected with so many of the other adverse childhood experiences because of the stress of living in poverty. It tends to fracture your marriage, and it tends to make parents very stressed. So you have other things that then start to happen, which impact the child's ability to develop a brain that can access the language pathways, that can access the working memory. We need to look at these children differently. And so I circle all the way back. I take Ross Green's words. We have to make a seismic shift, and we can do it in small pieces. You can just start by looking at these kids and saying, what's happened to you? I was working with a group of teachers yesterday, and they said, I didn't have enough time with them. There's never enough time, but it was my first time in that school, so it was really just kind of a commercial. Here's trauma. Here's a child's brain on trauma, just so you can start to understand that they are as different from non-traumatized children as autistic children are from non-autistic children. It's not the same disorder, but we all know you have to respond differently to autistic children. You don't respond to their behaviors the same way you would respond to a neurotypical child who was behaving that way, calling out or yelling or whatever. It's the same thing with trauma. It's their brains are developing differently from children without trauma, and we need to start recognizing it the way that we did for autistic children. And I have great faith that the teachers in this country have already begun to ask, what is this thing, trauma? I heard that, you know, my friend is working with this, and it's really working for her. So teachers are doing what they do best. Wait, there's a new way to help my children? And they want to know, and I am so happy that the Attachment Trauma Network is going to be able to help them.